Good morning and welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us here on this very chilly Baltimore morning. In our continuing conversations with mayoral candidates, people who are seeking to become the next mayor of Baltimore, those running the Democratic primary who seem to be the ones out there at the moment, we are now going to talk once again with Sheila Dixon, former Baltimore City mayor, running for mayor again. She came out with her platform around police reform and crime plans for the city. She and Nick Mosby are the only two candidates to do that with any depth, and joins us here this morning. And Ms. Sheila Dixon, welcome. Good to have you back with us. How are you?
Good, thank you. Sorry I couldn't be there in person, but I appreciate this opportunity.
I appreciate you coming back with us here. And folks, do join us at 410-319-8888. Holly, you're the first caller up. But join that line. It fills up quickly when we have Sheila Dixon on the air. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. We've got one tweet already. And you can also email us to talk@steinershow.org. We have an email question already. So all those venues, do join us. 410-319-8888 is the number here. So clearly, the question of crime and crime in this city is one of the biggest things that any of our candidates have to answer. Let me let you give an overview, then I have some specific questions about what I've read that you've put out, and I'm sure our listeners have other thoughts as well about that and other things. But so to start it off, Sheila, I mean, talk about what your overall vision is for this.
Well, first of all, you know, I am running for mayor because Baltimore's facing a tough and challenging time, and I have the experience and the leadership that we need to really reclaim, revive, and rebuild. And so we really focused on, because when we did a poll and we talked about issues that affected every area of this city, every income, every age, et cetera, crime was really at the top in their priority. And so as mayor, you have to make sure that your citizens feel safe and that you have a safe city. And so I talked to experts within the arena. In my past experience, even though some of the current candidates are claiming they reduced crime, it wasn't until my administration came on and focused on reducing crime through Fred Bielfeld and his team and working with, at that time, Pat Jessamy, who was a state's attorney, our federal prosecutors and our other partners in engaging our community, that we began to see incidents go down, we began to see crime go down, quality of life and neighborhoods were picking up. And so this time around, yes, we've expanded and we've looked even broader because it's always been a holistic approach. But in that, you know, my plan builds on expanding on the strategies under my administration that brought crime to tier low. I know that it takes and it makes, you know, to make our city safer. It's going to be the community, the police, business, faith leaders. And so my four-point plan targets the most violent offenders to prevent crime before it happens, using, you know, the power of data to connect officers with information that we've worked with our partners within city government out, holding our law enforcement accountable. We need to overhaul our recruitment, our training, and support services for police officers so that they can return to their mission to protect and serve our community. I'll also strengthen our civilian review board so the people in this city can have a real way to say and have our police officers be accountable by providing professional services that we haven't in the past, by allowing people not to file a formal complaint. They can send an email, they can call, they can write, they can show footage on their cameras, from their phones. We want to coordinate our city agencies and a holistic approach to public safety. So many of our problems come back to public health problems, lead paint, drug addiction. We need to help addicts. We need to, you know, put individuals who commit certain crimes into diversion programs. We need to have mental health services in our schools. We've got to really partner with our businesses and faith-based communities. And we need to prioritize, you know, by not only just from a job side, young people, to get them out of trouble and give them other options, but also mentoring programs with our kids and really strong mental health problems. And, you know, Mark, as we discussed this, this is a coincidence that happened today, but I'll share your story after you and I talk about a woman I just met sitting here in reference to something that happened that just gives you an indication of how, for the last several years, people just, our folks have not been policing and they have not been doing their job. And I'm going to share a case. And obviously this woman that I just met is going to make it publicly known what happened her personally to her sister and an incident with the death of her sister, but also the evidence. And it's just a coincidence that I just sat in this room. I'm in a quiet room waiting for my car. And the woman came in, recognized me, and shared this story with me.
I do want to hear that story. And I think our listeners do as well. And let me just tell our listeners right now, we're holding on the Holly, Kenneth, and Clarence. The first three callers up, we're coming to your call. And Theodore Bracey will be reading your email as well as the other emails that have come in. We'll get to all those with our guest, Sheila Dixon, who's running to become mayor of Baltimore City once again. When you, in your plan, community policing, you call for currently available, using currently available and underused data. What does that mean?
Well, one of the things, you know, we have crime stat, we have city stat, but one of the things that I've discovered and it was a presentation done by some police officers who used to be a part of Prince George's County. They created a software where our officers will be able to have access to real-time data when incidents are happening, so that when we plan our strategies about incidents happening in certain communities, we then can take that real-time data and focus our time and effort and energy in those areas. So they will be able to pull up when something happens, it's on their phones, it's on their laptops, in the car. I can see it, the police commissioner see it. And I'm not talking about after the fact when you're analyzing it. I mean, I'm talking about real time. And so strategically, we'll use that data. We'll bring in that software that can help. College Park currently uses it. And you can use it beyond just public safety. Prince George's County uses it. Washington, D.C. uses it. A number of cities within the West Coast uses it. There's also a connection where the community can also review and see certain pieces of it and can also be able to apply and using that in their neighborhood. Give you an example. Right now when car thefts, I noticed, have been happening in my area, and of course we get a voicemail on our phone saying there's been an increase of car theft in your neighborhood. Now, I don't know when it has gone on. They don't say, you know, it's happening in this week or this month. It just is a voicemail that comes on our phone at home and says to be on the lookout. There's been an increase in car theft in your neighborhood. Make sure you're putting things away. You're watching out, blah, blah, blah. But if that's the case and car theft is happening, that officer can actually see where it's coming from, and we can target and strategically our resources in those areas.
So before I open the phones here, one of the, you know, after Freddie Gray, after the uprising, after Freddie Gray's, the funeral that happened, one of the things that happened was that police collectively began to pull back from their duties. And that people say that was part of the reason that murder and different kind of crimes in the city soared, among complex reasons. But that was part of it. And that people feel in this city that the targeting of black citizens has gotten out of control. Also, the attitude of police, of many police, not all police, but of many police. So how do you address that? I mean, every mayor has come to office has not been able to tackle that particular question. How do you reform that? How do you change that?
Well, I disagree because I think we began to address that problem. And one of the ways that we have begun to do that under my prior administration is that we made it very clear that when our officers went through the training program and sensitivity training that was done and writing reports and getting out of their cars and getting engaged and involved in that community, I mean, all of that has to happen. And you're right. But we also have to make sure that our officers, because you can't protect and serve if you're afraid. And you have to do your job, and there has to be respect on both sides. And, yes, there's new technology that allows a citizen to be able to take But that officer coming in needs to know, this is what your role and responsibilities is. This is what we're accepting. This is what we're not accepting. And that, I believe we lost that. In the discipline, I mean, I notice right now that Commissioner Davis is trying to bring back a sense of discipline to our officers. I talked to a lot of officers who have left, and I asked them, why did you leave? You know, I understand things kind of just got out of control and got chaotic. So that commissioner has to go out and visit those districts. That mayor has to have some communication with our districts and our police officers. And before they come on board to say they want to be a Baltimore City police officer, they have to really show us why. We have to go through an analysis of either a deeper analysis, not only psychological, but we have to also let them know that being a public a police officer in Baltimore City means that this is what we're going to be expecting from you, this is what we need from you, and this is why we hope you want to be a part of this police department, as well as our officers have to do their job. They can't just go out and we got to meet these numbers. That's not what it's about, meeting those numbers. We got to go out and strategically, but keep in mind, it's just not that. There's other pieces that have to be addressed. We have to get these young brothers who are on the corner who don't want to be out there doing nothing in some cases. We got to get them into training programs that can help them to sustain themselves as well as their families. Young people between ages of 14 and 24, the numbers are staggering in Baltimore City compared to a lot of cities across this country that are not doing anything, that are not being productive, and then what happens? They make bad choices. We've got to, before that happens, we've got to do some preventive measures and work with them.
Sheila, I'm going to open up the phones here. Let folks bring their questions to the airwaves and also read some that came in. 410-319-8888. Then after break, hear the story that Sheila Dix wanted to tell that she heard this morning from one of her constituents. 410-319-8888 is the number here as we talk with Sheila Dixon running to become mayor of Baltimore City again. Holly, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Mayor Dixon, I am somebody who keeps an open mind when people are convicted of crimes. I think it's possible they're not guilty. You're addressing issues of crime and of helping people who are financially underprivileged. So I'm wondering how do you respond? Were you guilty of the charges of stealing gift cards from people with little money, the gift cards that were supposed to go to people who have very little money?
No, I was not. I did not steal them. I should have disclosed a gift given to me by a friend. And that program I put together to help needy families. And I've helping needy families not only since I've been in public office, but when I was out of public office. And I know that that's one of the clouds that are over me. But I also paid my time. I paid community service. I've been working in the community since then, and I have to deal with that. But that doesn't define who I am, because I know that it was a simple matter that could have been avoided. And I won't even go into other factors, but. You know, a lot of people suffered as a result of that, as well as myself and my family and just so many good things that was happening in this city. And so I've moved on from that. And now I have to gain trust back from people, and I know that. And I know it's an uphill battle, but I'm committed to this city. I'm committed to being transparent. I'm committed to continue to work with those people who need us to help them to uplift their lives, and I'm going to continue to move forward. But I appreciate you asking me that question.
Let's go back to the phones here, and this question has been asked of you a lot. So I mean, I wasn't going to bring it up today. The caller brought it up, and you know, the poll, I guess it happened a few months back from the Sun, if I remember correctly. Said that you that the Sheila Dixon's campaign had 25% unshakable support, unshakable. and that there were 35% of the people said because of that incident that they people that group said that a third of the people would not vote for you. What do you say to them about what to the, that that one third of the voters polled about the gift cards? I mean, I think you've talked about the mistake, you know, about not talking, not putting out the gifts you got.
Mark, I just answered the question, and to those 35% people who have an issue with that, I would ask that they would look at what I have done in the past and what I can do to help to bring the city to where it needs to go, and that. Again, I will continue to be transparent. I will continue to work with citizens across the city, and that I know that as we move forward, I can make a difference in what happens in this city. Yeah, I love my private life. Do I like to be challenged on things that I know don't define who I am and what I've been able to do? You know, the media alone, you know, of course, you're going to always, people are going to be judgmental. But the other piece that I ask people to say is everybody deserves a second chance, no matter, and nobody's perfect. You show me a perfect person. But I also know that I've done more good in this city than anybody else has, and that no one can stand on the record that I have done over my public life. So as much as I love my private life and love everything that I'm doing to continue to work in the community, to serve, and enhance this community as a private citizen, I also know what it takes to move the city to another level. And no one has experienced and made the kind of significant changes that I've made over the years in my public life. None of the other candidates have ever managed city government and have a clue to what it's going to take day one to hit the ground and run.
Let me go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Kenneth, you're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning, Sheila Dixon.
Good morning.
My name is Kenneth Wiley. I have seen you do your community time, but let's get away from the past. The past can help us. You agree?
Yes, I agree.
The past can help us. Okay, I truly prayed for you to come back, and I truly believe that when you come back, that you're going to do the job that needs to be done. This city has issues, really bad issues. We need to be taken care of by a serious mayor, and I believe that you are that mayor. I'm going to be one of the front runners, yelling and screaming for you to come back. I've done community work for Catholic charities and other charities, and I would like to see you come back and jump straight on the issues of homelessness, housing, education, protection from crime. You are the mayor for the people, and we need to get rid of that past thing. If Bill Clinton can do what he did and still serve two terms, I'm pretty sure you can get out there and reclaim your job and do the job that you were meant to do for us. I really do truly believe that you are going to do, when you get in that seat this time, you're going to do the right thing. You agree?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Kenneth. Thanks for the call. 410-319-8888. We're talking with Sheila Dixon, who's going to become the mayor of Baltimore City. And Clarence, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Steiner. Good morning,
good
Ms.
Morning.
Dixon.
Good morning.
Good morning. You know, Ms. Dixon, the gift card thing, that doesn't even cross my mind anymore. What does cross my mind, and I'm not being offensive or trying to be offensive, but it's like you're sounding like a rehash of something old. And what I mean by that is all the things that you mentioned that you want to do, you're talking about them within the existing structure of structural racism that has existed all the way from Schaefer through O'Malley. Now, when you talk specifically about those things, be specific about them. What are you going to do about the lack of training? What are you going to do about the way that the IBEW and other trade organizations do to operate in a fashion that's disadvantaged to the local community through lack of training, and then the hiring practices that they use to bring people into the city and earn salaries and take that money elsewhere? Also, when you look at the FOP, a brick wall between the mayor's office and the police commissioner that doesn't, it's an impediment to the mayor's authority over the police department. You know, when you see these things, the things I'm talking about, I'm looking for specific answers in addressing those type of problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Clarence. Sheila Dixon?
Thank you. And you brought up a number of issues, so I'm going to try to be very succinct. But I would also encourage you to go on my website, SheilaDixonForMayor.com, and take a look at my crime plan. We're about to put out our economic and job plan. But let's start with the FOP, and then I'll go with the jobs, opportunities, minorities, et cetera. And so in my crime plan, one of the sections that is so important, and you're right, is that the FOP is a part. The FOP are the police. They're the unions of the police. They represent the police. But they have to be a part of that partnership. And it can be done. You know, I've worked with FOP presidents and unions. You know, it's about sitting down. It's about realizing why we're doing the jobs that we're doing and what are we trying to accomplish. And so, you know, part of working with the FOP in that partnership process is a definite part of my crime plan. Now, let me move forward, because, yes, I mentioned old, but a whole lot of what I'm proposing is actually new, as well as incorporating. But sometimes if something is working, you don't throw it out because an administration changes. You build on it. And ultimately, when you build on it, it just gets better. I've been working for the last 5 years with MBEs and WBEs, with contractors. I've gained so much knowledge and information about the construction industry and the games that are played on both sides. I know that as I've helped companies over the last 5 years to increase their business, that they hire people that look like you and I. They give that extra fender a second chance. They provide that training. What I wanted to have in our budget, our billion-dollar budget in city government, is that we allocate more money and resources with our partners, with effective programs, not somebody who just has a program to provide training, and then that individual jumps to another program that provides training, and then ultimately there's no job there for them, but to bring together the different programs, if it's construction training, if it's IT, if it's healthcare, if it's STEM training, so that we can begin to get folks into these effective programs in the city, work in partnership, providing funding, so that ultimately that person gets a job. And I'm going to give you a good example where sometimes legislators don't necessarily think out of a box. All right, the state passed a billion-dollar bill to do school construction. But in that, what they didn't do was create an infrastructure so that these companies who are going to be building these new schools can hire people, local community people. Now, it's in the bill, but what they missed is that a lot of folks in this area, within either the schools, because they're not equipped, or in the training programs, to connect those companies to those programs and to the schools, local schools, make sure that we are training young people and individuals who want to change careers or coming out of prison, be prepared so that those companies can hire them. So we have to better connect what we currently have. And so now what you're going to find is as those schools are being built, they're going to be bringing in people from outside of Baltimore to build them, because we aren't going to be able to meet the capacity. So now's the time to roll up our sleeves, get with those programs, get with those contractors who are going to be building those schools, and get folks trained and ready to be able to get a job, because ultimately construction lives on past us, and people make a more than livable wage in that arena, and use that same model for some of our other entry-level training programs that are needed. And I'm willing to put money in the pot to help enhance those effective training programs that at the end that are going to provide jobs. Now, you did mention another one, but you mentioned like a whole lot of
right.
things. I don't know if Mark remembers.
I will. We'll get to that. The last part of our question right after this this quick break that we have to take, and also let Willett, Tyrone, and Tim know that we're going to get to all of your calls as well. and read this tweet and read this email that came in, two emails that came in for Sheila Dixon, running to become the next mayor. On our way there to break, I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner here with Sheila Dixon, running to become the next mayor of Baltimore City. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages. And John Wesley logged on to our Facebook page and asked, Mark, I would like for Sheila to address how she intends to balance quote-unquote redemption and governing if reelected, and will hiring black males be important to her in her next term?
The way that I will balance redemption and bringing the city forward is by inclusiveness within city government, transparency within city government, and yes, in my past life, I hired a number of African-American men, young, who were part of my administration, and in moving forward, I've already begun to identify some young people, particularly African-American males, who I've been watching over this last couple years, who I would love to have them to be a part of my administration, who are that could do an extraordinary job. You know, my only criteria is that people be committed, that politics is removed from the process, and that people will know, roll up their sleeves and work hard. Because I'm going to be putting in a lot of hours, and people that work for me, and they people that Mark, you probably know, and others, know that when you work for Sheila Dixon, it's not an 8:30 to 4:30 job. It's a job where you're committed long term, and I don't accept excuses. I don't accept laziness, and everybody's got to be on board, you know, and on one accord. And so, yes, hopefully that answered that question.
One question I have here is one of your opponents in this race, Senator Catherine Pugh, and Delegate Kurt Anderson chaired this committee in Annapolis to change the Law Officers' Bill of Rights. And there was a demonstration there yesterday. Part of it was about that in Annapolis. And we've had people in this program who are talking a lot about the LOBR. And they wanted to – one of the things was that officers would no longer be allowed to wait 10 days to give testimony to the police department. It had to be 5. But they're saying there should be no waiting period, that officers should be like everybody else and have to answer for things immediately. And B, that the Internal Review Board is only made up of officers, and if they do have civilians, they'll be appointed by the police. And people are saying that doesn't cut it, and that what we need is a strong civilian review board with teeth that can actually do its job with investigators. What's your opinion?
Well, if you look at my crime plan, and we'll go back to the civilian review board, number one, that's why the civilian review board has to have professional staff. It hasn't had staff in the past. It was part of an agency, and people used to assist, but I mean actually dedicating professional staff who have experience and knowledge to work with the Civilian Review Board. That's one of the points in my crime plan. That's something that I would institute right away. I agree. If an incident happened with a police officer, no, they should not have to wait 10 days. They need to be interviewed right away so that the information is fresh, so we can get the right information and stories don't change from day to day. And so I think that, and I hope, you know, in this term in Annapolis, that our legislators will do their job and make that happen. So I support that wholeheartedly. I mean, I think that's only fair.
410-319-8888. Tyrone, you're on the air.
I'd like to say, for real, poor black people. I mean, just as naive today as they were when Sheila Dixon was in office the first time. Sheila is spewing out the same rhetoric she did to win office and get in there the first time. And she ain't going to do no more now than she did yesterday. I mean, people's misery in this city, sitting there, is more miserable. I mean, after she left and then when Kelly got in there, people's lives are more miserable in this city than they was before she left. She ain't going to do nothing. Black people, don't be a fool and vote for this woman again.
All right, do you have a question?
obviously he just had a statement, and he has his opinion.
410-319-8888. Let us go to the next caller up. Would be Tim. You're on the air.
Thanks, Mark. Can you hear me?
Good. Yes, we can, Tim. Welcome.
Yes. You know, I don't want to make this personal at all, like the last caller, because I truly believe that, you know, Ms. Dixon is a very good person. I supported her before when she was in leadership in the city. I want to sort of believe or question, has her opportunity already passed? I think the city right now needs a different type of leadership with some new ideas, and I'm not really hearing these new ideas and new methods of implementing things from Ms. Dixon. I'm looking for someone who, with that level of experience, can deliver a very thoughtful plan on how to revitalize some of these neighborhoods, how to connect the dots with some of the issues, budgetary issues, but also look at getting rid of some inefficiency in government, making some cuts and trimming away some of the fat, bringing property taxes down. I'm not really hearing that from her, but I'm hearing that from other candidates. And it's a little bit disappointing, and I'd just like to hear her perspective on some of those issues.
All right, Tim.
We started off talking about the crime plan. So when we want to talk about my economic development and my jobs plan, part of some of the areas that you're speaking about is within that plan. And part of the way we go into that and move is the first thing that I would do, because for the last 5 years, city government has been dysfunctional. And I'm going to do performance audits in all of our agencies, because our agencies, first of all, that one of the roles of the mayor is to have agencies functioning in a professional and a accountable way to the citizens because of the taxpayers that we pay. So we need performance audits. Our agencies have to understand that they work for the taxpayers, and that, you know, government is just not an 8:30 to 4:30 job. So some of the agencies I want to change. Some of them are 24/7 departments. Secondly, I want to increase for our city workers who tend to have to work 2 and 3 jobs, who now make, in some cases, minimum wage. I want to increase their minimum wage to $15 for city workers, so that our city employees have an opportunity to be able to buy a home and take care of their family and help them out of poverty and to establish a working family. I want to triple our job training program. A lot of people who are out here who need the opportunity, we want to create triple what we can contribute to job training. I want to do more investment in neighborhoods who have been underserved by creating a land bank. We don't have cash. See, people think we have a lot of money. We don't really have a lot of money. But what we do have is we have property and we have land. And creating a land bank will allow small individual people who are developers, to give them that land or that property to develop, of course, with a plan, of course, showing financing, where they could take the value of that land or that property to the bank to offset that. I want to work with, again, minority companies, even enhance their opportunities with not only city government, but work with the private sector so that our private sector can begin to buy Baltimore and with their services that they provide as well. So when we talk about connecting the dots, because that's interesting that a couple of the candidates are using what I had been talking about. So they're using, I guess they went back, checked out my old past and said, let's connect the dots. Well, that's part of how we have moved forward. So those are just, and then last but not least, you know, investing in our communities, we need to remember that an economy is focused on the people. We need to improve the conditions of our neighborhoods. So we need to support our community development corporations, but we also have to bring our nonprofits and community organizations together to really strategically create plans. We just can't go in our neighborhoods and tear down property. We've got to have a master plan in place to work with those neighborhoods. We had one working in Park Heights. It hasn't been functioning in the last several years. We need to go back to that community in Park Heights where we've torn down properties or we've just neglected it, and work with the communities in that area as well as Spantown and others to create more affordable inclusionary housing. We passed a law many years ago, but we haven't instituted that inclusionary housing where we're doing developments that we can provide better housing for low-income families.
There was a, before we go back to the phones, Arme, Leo, Jim, William, we're going to try to get to all of your calls. Everybody else has called in these lines here. And we these emails that have come through as well from Fatima. But recently the mayor's people met with the Baltimore Legislative Caucus to support bond bills that are coming up. And one of the pushbacks there was that where's the plan to include the community? And why wasn't money in these bond bills there to support significant black institutions like Arena Players and UB Blake? There were a couple of black institutions on there, but most of them were going to the same institutions they've always gone to. And people asked that question. I mean, this is how we put these bond bills up. How does that help the black community? And then we had this innovation village that came out that they were talking about today. And people want to ask the same question. Where's the inclusion of community and figuring out how you're going to rebuild the West Side? How are you going to be rebuild Sandtown, Winchester? What's your plan and thoughts on those things?
Well, I know I was just briefed about a week ago on the innovative village. And I think that through that effort, and I know that they're trying to connect Coppin Heights all the way down to Mount Royal with our anchor institutions. And part of what has to happen is, you know, I've been meeting with small developers who want an opportunity, want to be able to take advantage of TIFs and pilots, want to be able to advance their development within those communities. So what we have to do is we have to look at, for example, Sandtown. We have to look at West Baltimore, where Bon Secours is, and we have to build part of where certain areas have benefited is because they have strong anchors within those communities. And so I think what's happening with the Innovative Village is a great opportunity to bring Druid Heights, Coppin Heights, Reservoir Hill, and Mount Roy, and all of those neighborhoods together, which they have been talking about and doing, and working with them in partnership to enhance and create not only jobs, but also to be able to provide people with livable, affordable housing. And I think we're going to see through that effort as well as others to expand in that. We also have to look at, you know, where, like in Sandtown, of course, you know, many years ago there was an investment of bricks and mortar.
Right.
But we got to deal with the human capital, and we've got to work on that hand in hand as we try to uplift communities. And that's a big piece. That's not short term, it's long term. A lot of folks get into public office, they don't want to deal with the human capital piece. And that's the piece that I believe is important and has to be addressed first and foremost in order for us to then work with people and create those communities. Is that human development is so significantly key. So we got to work on health issues, drug treatment, not necessarily putting treatment centers in bombarding a Sandtown with that, but we have to work with those schools in Sandtown, work with those families, like through Promise Heights. I'm working on an initiative now called the Community Development Empowerment Center, where we're going to create a clearinghouse where people can come to find resources to help them to benefit themselves and their families. So we've got to work with anchors in order to enhance, because keep in mind, our tax base is based on property tax and piggyback tax. So as we continue to lose population to the surrounding counties, we've got to begin to create a plan to chop away at our property tax to attract people back to the city. But keep in mind, for every penny that we reduce the property tax, that's 100. So if we reduce the property tax by 50 cents, that's about $170 million. So the question is, how are we going to offset that and make that money up? And where's it going to come from? Or what are we going to eliminate to make that happen? See, people sometimes tend to look at the big picture, but when it comes to getting down to the nitty-gritty and understanding how city government works and where we depend on resources, We're going to have to work in partnership with the state. I know Hogan is getting ready to invest. How much money was that? Was it $700 million or?
Right. It was $700 million, but nobody knows, as the president of the Senate, Mike Miller, said, is this new money or old money? If it's old money, then what happens to the money that's already coming into the city? Is this really an investment? And there's no plan about what happens to the people in those communities.
Right. Well, and that's why I just recently sent out an email requesting a meeting with some folks, because I want to sit down. I mean, I didn't hear the city's position about that. But we don't want to just tear down and not have a plan to build up if we do that. And I know that I can hit the ground running, and I'm going to keep saying that because I know none of them have the experience. The learning curve is going to take a couple years, and then people are going to be surprised about, oh, I thought I had the authority to do this or do that, along with some changes that are happening currently on the city council. There's going to be a whole new, practically new city council. And so, you know, city council has a role in this process. When you pass a budget, it's not just the mayor, it's the mayor and city council.
So let me get back to the phones and read these other, try to get these, turn this over to my listeners here at 410-319-8888. Go to line one. Aramay, you've been waiting for a while.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question for Sheila. I know when she comes back, she's going to do better as far as reputation, knowing that people are looking for any little bit of any occasion to destroy your personality as a black politician. So you have to be aware of your surroundings. Don't make the same mistake. Now, moving forward, I want to talk about structural racism. This.
All right, go ahead. We don't have a short amount of time, so please go get into it. What do you want to ask? Arme, are you there still?
What she want to do, what is she going to do about structural racism? Like, so the key position to jobs are occupied by people of other descent. Like, let's say, like, all hiring managers are white. They don't want to bring black face into the job. All the black women midlife are not finding jobs. That's part of structural racism. So I just want to know what she's going to do about that. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a good question. Sheila Dixon.
Yes, thank you. And when we talk about structural racism, you know, the mayor has a responsibility and the role in city government within her agency. And so it really starts with what we do in city government, making sure that we have qualified people of diversity working for city government. Now, if within the private sector, the role that a mayor can play is by working with those businesses, encouraging them to understand that Baltimore is made up of a diverse community and it should be reflected in that. But the first role and responsibility is how we run and what the people of city government look like and how I hire African Americans and others to be a part of my administration.
That'll be an issue we'll be raising as well down the campaign trail. This is a huge issue in Baltimore. I'm glad you raised it, RMA. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Leo, line three.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leo.
Good morning, Mayor Sheila Dixon and Mark Steiner.
Good morning.
Had I not already committed, Sheila, to Joshua Harris, who's running for mayor, I'd be committed to you. I already committed to him prior to really knowing that you were going to run. But let me just say, I don't know of anyone with a higher integrity than Mayor Sheila Dixon. This whole business about this $600 in gift cards is something that, again, it may have been an indiscretion. You asked for forgiveness. You have my forgiveness. And of course, you weren't step and fetch it. You weren't the puppet that Martin O'Malley thought you'd be. So you did receive an $83,000 pension. Am I correct?
Yes.
Well, then that denotes to me, Mark, that this was about a red herring or something about setting up this great lady as I believe that the Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights, by the way, is also unconstitutional. You have my blessing, Mayor Sheila Dixon, in the context of your fighting for us and a second chance is always in order if we are fair-minded thinking people. David Warnock, by the way, is not the answer. I know he wants to buy the office of mayor. He's rich, but he's not the answer. We need someone with experience. And I can only say to you, Sheila Dixon, you have my blessing. As I said before, the Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights is unconstitutional, and we need to knock it out in federal court.
Thank you, Leo.
Thank you, Leo. And I just want to commend Leo just because of what he's been doing with this whole Boy Scouts. And, you know, and I remember those when I was kids, and that's something that's missing. And I really commend Leo for hanging in there and working through that process and really enhancing young African-American men's lives through his efforts. And I appreciate his honesty, and I appreciate his involvement and true commitment. And he doesn't just talk. See, part of what we tend to do here sometimes is people like to talk a lot, but they don't want to do things. And Leo is a great example and a great leader of doing in the community.
Donna Oppenheim writes in, what are your thoughts on Baltimore Link? With new jobs, people will have to get to work on time. Will the number 8 be moved to Charles Street? I guess she's worrying in toto about this whole plan since we killed the Red Line about how we're going to create transportation in the city.
Right. And here again, transportation, MTA, is run by the state. And it's so imperative that the city works with the state to make sure that we don't lose services, but services are enhanced by better connecting people to jobs and opportunities, as well as better connecting for time between light rail, subway, along with potentially even enhancing the circulator that I created, as well as a smart car. But it's so important that we begin to really work with the state. And here again, if we don't remove the politics of Democrats and Republicans, and really focus on the real issues of what we need to have accomplished. So I'm looking forward to, I've had a briefing on the CityLink. I've heard some concerns about the loss of services over in Greenmount, which we don't want to lose on that service, as well as the connection for the 8 bus, because I did a tour. I thought it was the 13 bus, but I did a tour on North Avenue. I had to wait 45 minutes for a bus to show that there was a real disconnect. But we definitely have to enhance it so we can get people to the jobs within the city, but also within the region.
Let us go back to the phones, 410-319-8888. Let's go to Patrick. You're on the air.
Hey, Sheila, how are you? This is Patrick. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Patrick?
Well, you know, I've been talking to you. I met you when I first moved here from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And then you was out of office.
Right.
And I have been traveling back and forth to New Jersey to pay my mortgage, because as a contractor, I cannot get no work here in Baltimore because the system is so corrupt. And the Caribbean community in Park Heights, who's in the construction, Baltimore is losing them because many of them is moving back to New Jersey and New York and Atlanta. So I want to know what your plan is for this, and I'm telling a lot of people as I travel back and forth every day, you are the best person for the job, and I want to know what are you going to do about it. That's number one. Number two, coming from the Caribbean, every Wednesday we would take 5 hours out of class and go to the technical center to learn a skill. And I believe if we would do that here in Baltimore with these kids who's in high school, take them out every Wednesday or Thursday or Friday for 6 hours and let them learn a skill, I believe we can do. We can put a big dent into the poverty in Baltimore and let these kids have an opportunity to go on and be successful. So this is what I have to say this morning.
Okay.
And let me know what you plan to do regarding this corruption. Why so many contractors?
All right, Patrick, let me answer the question, because we're almost out of time. I want Sheila to have a chance to respond.
Well, first of all, you know, since I've been working with contractors over the last 5 years, they cannot pull wool over my head anymore. I mean, I've gained so much knowledge and information about MBEs, WBEs, as well as majority companies and the games that both sides play through this process, as well as our agencies and departments. So I'm not disagreeing with you, but I also know that capacity is so important, and I really don't want to see your companies leave Baltimore and go to New Jersey, but I really want you to stay here because we really need you more here today than ever because of the amount of construction going on and the amount of requirement for MBEs and WBEs. And so you know that when those opportunities, I'm going to make sure that there's one department that's handling within city government MBEs and WBEs and making sure that our agencies, when they, those project managers, those individuals putting together those the bids and the projects that are going on, that those departments understand that they all work together cohesively and making sure that we not only meet those goals, but that we identify companies who can meet those goals. Because I don't think it's always about the lowest bidder in the process. I also think it's about the most responsible bidder. But and then I agree. What I want to see happen is when young people go into high school from the ninth grade, that they begin to work with companies, you know, and work with the areas that they want to focus on when they graduate from the ninth grade on. So when they leave school, they not only have a skill, but they have the potential for a job if they don't want to go to college, or their potential to go into a training program to enhance their ability. And so we've got to really create an infrastructure and a partnership with our construction companies, et cetera, and unions to work with our young people from the time they enter the ninth grade, after they do take those altitude tests and determine what areas they might have a potential interest in moving forward.
We are just about out of time here. I do want to ask you, Sheila, before we do, see if we can get one more call here if we can, but to give our listeners the information, as some of them are calling in asking about your campaign and how to get in touch if they want to work with you.
Well, people can go on my website, which is www.SheilaDixonForMayor.com. All of our information is there as far as where the headquarters is, phone number, how to sign up. We've been out doing phone calls 5-6 days a week, knocking on doors. This is a grassroots effort, and we're touching the voters. And I'm hoping that the voters realize that this is a full, you know, Baltimore's a tough town. And it's going to take hardworking people who are committed to making this a better place to live. And I'm running because Baltimore is facing tough challenges, and I have experienced the leadership to be able to reclaim, rebuild, and revive Baltimore, and I know I can do that.
Sheila Dixon, thanks so much for taking the time. I look forward to talking to you again soon. We'll talk to you down the campaign trail.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We have to take a very brief break. When we come back, I'm joined by Dr. Alondra Nelson. Talk about her book, The Social Life of DNA, Race, Reparations, and Reconciliation After the Genome. And on our way to break, I want to remind you, I'll be speaking with MSNBC national correspondent Joy Ann Reed at the Enoch Pratt Free Library on Thursday at 7 p.m. We'll discuss her book, Fracture, Barack Obama, the Clintons, and the Racial Divide. More information at calendar.prattlibrary.org. We'll be right back.